Welcome to Reader's Digest, brought to you by Owl Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio. I'm John Fisher, and during the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from Reader's Digest. First, health. It is easier than ever to prevent and treat osteoporosis, but the number of cases is on the rise. How can you avoid becoming a victim? Here's A Silent Epidemic of Broken Bones by Sari Harar in Reader's Digest. First, however, these sidebars here. Number one, 300,000 Americans break a hip every year as a result of osteoporosis. The second little fact here, drugs can reduce fractures by 40% in women and up to 67% in men. Number three, men age 50 plus are more likely to have an osteoporosis-related bone break than prostate cancer. Fact number four, the number of private doctors with DXA scanners dropped by 26% after Medicare reduced its reimbursements. And finally, number five, the average density of thigh bones of people as young as 30 decreased from the years 2005 to 2014. And now, A Silent Epidemic of Broken Bones in Reader's Digest. At age 53, Lisa Rustin slipped on a Del Mar, California sidewalk and fractured her arm. A bone density scan, recommended by her gynecologist, because of her family history of thinning bones, revealed osteoporosis. She threw away her high heels, quit downhill skiing, overhauled her diet to include more calcium-rich foods, and started walking with a backpack filled with books. Weight-bearing exercise is an important way to strengthen your bones. Rustin also began taking calcium and vitamin D supplements and a biophosphonate drug, the most commonly prescribed osteoporosis treatment. She considers her fracture to be, well, something of a lucky break. My mother had broken her hip in the past when there was no treatment for her osteoporosis, says Rustin, who is now 58 years old. After I broke my arm, she fractured her shoulder. By the time I got the news about my bone density test, my mom had passed away due to complications from her shoulder fracture. That was my wake-up call. Osteoporosis, the term literally means porous bone, arises when bone cells that break down are not replenished by new ones. That causes bones to break more easily and take longer to heal when they do. Over a lifetime, 50% of all women will have an osteoporosis-related fracture, a risk greater than the odds for heart attack, stroke, and breast cancer combined. For men, the odds are up to 1 in 4. In fact, a man over the age of 50 is more likely to have such a break than he is prostate cancer. All told, of the 2 million Americans who have an osteoporosis-related fracture each year, 300,000 will break a hip. Among them, half will never walk again without assistance. 1 in 4 will die within a year. Osteoporosis doesn't just break bones, it smashes lives. What makes osteoporosis even more tragic is that in the past 25 years, it has become highly treatable and even preventable. Dual energy X-ray absorptiometry scans, or DXA scans, which measure the amount of calcium and other minerals in your bones, are accurate enough for the World Health Organization to use them as the criteria for diagnosing osteoporosis and its precursor, osteopenia. DXA scans are also effective in predicting fracture risk. They are covered by Medicare and most private health insurance. Biophosphonates and other drugs that treat low bone density can reduce the risk of fractures by 40% in women and up to 67% in men. But despite these advances, fractures are becoming more common, not less. According to a 2018 study, after a decade of declines, the number of broken hips rose 2.5% in women ages 65 to 69 and 3.8% in women ages 70 to 74 between the years of 2013 and 2015. E. Michael Lewicki, MD, the lead researcher and a director at the New Mexico Clinical Research and Osteoporosis Center, estimates that 11,000 hip fractures and 2,000 deaths could have been prevented over those 3 years. How is this increase in fractures possible? Deep misunderstandings about what really affects our bones, overblown fears about bone-building drugs, changes in health insurance coverage for bone scans, and the quote-unquote, "I feel healthy so I must be fine," hubris of aging baby boomers have all combined to put our bones at risk. We have our blood pressure checked regularly and our cholesterol levels measured, but too many of us ignore screening for bone health, Dr. Lewicki told Newsmax.com. If you want to avoid becoming a victim, keep in mind these five important medical findings. Number one, bone density scans are key. The only way to tell whether you have osteoporosis or osteopenia is with a bone density test. DXA scans, the gold standard, are recommended by the National Osteoporosis Foundation, or the NOF, for women age 65 and older, for men age 70 and older, and as early as age 50 for those with at-risk bones, such as postmenopausal women, smokers, and anyone who is underweight, drinks more than 2 alcoholic drinks a day, has a family history of osteoporosis, or has previously broken a bone. But don't wait for your doctor to order a scan. If you've had one broken bone, research shows that your odds for another increase as much as ninefold. Yet, in a 2017 NOF survey, 96% of women who'd had a fracture said their doctors still did not recommend getting a bone density test. After a heart attack, people are evaluated and put on a plan with medication and lifestyle changes to prevent another one. The same thing should happen after a fracture, says Bart Clark, MD, the president of the American Society for Bone and Mineral Research and a researcher at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science. A big part of the problem is that the number of private physicians with DXA scanners has dropped 26% since the year 2007, when Medicare reduced the amount of money it pays doctors per scan. Most hospitals still offer scans, but in rural areas, this can mean that patients have to drive hours to get one. As a result, since the year 2008, nearly 3.7 million fewer women on Medicare have had bone density tests than had been projected. On the plus side, in the year 2018, a coalition of bone health groups recommended that after a hip or spine fracture, all healthcare practitioners involved in a person's care, from ER doctors and primary care physicians to gynecologists, orthopedic surgeons, physical therapists, and registered dietitians, make sure there's a bone check and, if needed, treatment. That's already happening at approximately 200 medical centers around the United States, with good results. Kaiser Permanente Southern California's Healthy Bones program, for example, cut second fracture rates by up to 60% in 4 years. If you're younger than 40 and have risk factors for osteoporosis, it's not too early to talk with your doctor about getting tested. Anyone 40 or older, meanwhile, can estimate his or her fracture risk with the online Fracture Risk Assessment Tool, or FRAX, at sheffield.ac.uk/frax, FRAX. Again, that's Sheffield, SHEFFIELD, .ac.uk/frax. Frax does not replace a bone scan, but it is a good way to help you decide whether you need one or are at risk for a fracture in the next 10 years. Number two, men also need to get tested, and some younger people do too. Osteoporosis isn't just a women's disease. Don, now 74 years old, a retiree in the Clearwater, Florida area, he asked us not to use his last name, was diagnosed with osteoporosis at age 44, despite an active lifestyle that included daily walks and 40 miles of weekly bicycling. I had strained my back, and x-rays of my spine showed that it was deteriorating, he says. It runs in my family, though. I think I'm the only man who inherited osteoporosis. Scientists don't know why, but men have a higher risk for death after a hip fracture caused by osteoporosis than women do. So it's especially important for men to get scanned and treated if necessary. Don's DXA scan results improved after a year of bisphosphonate treatment. I had stomach problems with daily pills, but a weekly pill was okay, he says. Now I focus on healthy eating, take vitamins D and K and calcium, and walk every day. My bone density is staying stable. Don's story also demonstrates that younger people are at increasing risk. While osteoporosis is most common in women over the age of 60 and men over the age of 70, a University of Nevada study in the year 2018 found that the average density of thigh bones of Americans as young as 30 was significantly lower in the year 2014 than in the year 2005. Too much sitting and too little activity are likely the top reasons for the decline, the researchers concluded. But there are other surprising risk factors. Weight loss surgery, diabetes, breast cancer, and air pollution are all associated with bone problems, as are androgen deprivation therapy, used to treat prostate cancer, and corticosteroids, used to treat rheumatoid arthritis. Number 3. Supplements alone aren't enough. A study found that about 3 in 10 postmenopausal women believe that simply drinking milk or taking calcium supplements is all you need to prevent broken bones. In fact, the research on calcium and its frequent sidekick, vitamin D, is mixed. 2 recent large reviews of well-designed studies suggest calcium and vitamin D do not reduce fracture risk. But a study in the year 2018 did show that a higher intake of dairy foods is associated with higher bone mineral density and vertebral strength in men. For now, most experts suggest getting 1,000 to 1,200 milligrams of calcium and 400 to 4,000 IU of vitamin D a day from food and drinks. A glass of milk has 30% of the recommended calcium and 25% of the vitamin D. Besides dairy, you'll find calcium in kale, broccoli, canned sardines with bones, and fortified breakfast cereals. Salmon, tuna, and egg yolks provide vitamin D as well as calcium. If you can't get enough through food, Dr. Clark recommends a supplement of 500 milligrams of calcium, plus 600 IU of vitamin D for people younger than 70, and 800 IU after the age of 70. He adds, it's also important to have an overall healthy diet with enough protein and not to overdo alcohol, caffeine, sodas, or refined carbohydrates. Note that no supplement has ever proved to prevent fractures in people with osteoporosis, Dr. Clark says. Some could even be harmful, such as strontium, a mineral touted for stronger bones that's now off the shelves in Europe after the European Medicines Agency warned consumers to stop using it because of increases in heart attacks and blood clots. Number 4. Take bone-protecting drugs if your doctor recommends them. Biophosphonates, including alendronate, that's Fosamax, and ibendronate, that's Boniva, reduce the risk of a fracture by slowing the breakdown of bone cells. They are the most commonly prescribed drugs for osteoporosis because they work. Yet, these drugs are often a hot topic for the wrong reasons when newcomers join osteoporosis support groups such as Bone Boosters of New Mexico. People are terrified, says Marge Peterson, 77 years old, a retired teacher from Las Cruces who started the group. They've seen so much negative publicity and misinformation online or have been scared by other people about side effects. In fact, the number of Americans using bisphosphonates dropped more than 50% between the years of 2008 and 2012, a National Institutes of Health study reported. There are certainly side effects: bone, joint, and muscle pain, nausea, heartburn, and gastric ulcers. More rarely, the drugs can lead to an erosion of the jawbone. 1 in 10,000 patients may experience a thigh bone fracture, too. But the risks, says Andrea Singer, MD, chief medical officer of the NOF, quote, are very low, far lower than the risk for a fracture in untreated osteoporosis, unquote. Your doctor might recommend periodic drug holidays or trying alternative medications. Some of the newer treatments show great promise. A game-changing study of 2,000 women with osteopenia in the year 2018 found that the bisphosphonate zoledronate, that's reclassed, reduced the risk of a fracture by about one-third. Raloxifene, which goes by the name Evista, and denosumab, which goes by the name Prolia, are alternatives to biophosphonates that also help slow the breakdown of bone. Teriparatide, known as Forteo, and abaloparatide, known as Timlose, the latest osteoporosis medications to be approved by the FDA, work differently. They actually help build new bone. And finally, number 5, even a little exercise helps. High-impact exercises such as dancing, jogging, and jumping rope help keep bones strong. But so does walking or using an elliptical machine or stair stepper. Muscle-strengthening moves work too, as can yoga. People with osteoporosis used to be warned against high-impact exercise because of the risk of falls and fractures. But a study in the year 2017 found that only 30 minutes, twice a week, of high-intensity exercise improved bone density, structure, and strength in postmenopausal women with low bone mass without adverse effects. And a recent review found that combining exercise with bone-building drugs works better than either strategy alone to boost bone density in people with osteoporosis. Want to avoid breaking a bone? One of the best things you can do is go break a sweat. Next, from Reader's Digest, we go to the section, I Am the Food on Your Plate. This comes from Kate Lowenstein, the editor-in-chief of Vice's health website called Tonic, and Daniel Gritzer, the culinary director of the cooking site Serious Eats. This time, it's a sweetener that's the bee's knees. Here's Honey by Kate Lowenstein and Daniel Gritzer in Reader's Digest. One spring day, thankfully not too long from now, once the flowers have begun to open, a bee will hover and zip through your yard and dive bomb your picnic table. While you're thinking about avoiding a sting, that bee is focused on something else entirely. Me. A honeybee has about 6 weeks to live. Today, like most days, her task is to fly as many as 3 miles from home, stick her long, straw-like tongue into 100 or so flowers, slurp up tiny droplets of sweet, watery nectar, and store it in a stomach-like organ called a honey sac. When the bee has had her fill, she'll fly home, her special enzyme-filled belly already breaking the nectar down into glucose and fructose. So begins the minor miracle of nature that leads to me. Once at the hive, the bee will deposit her haul into the mouth of one of her co-workers, who will relay it to another, and so on for about 20 minutes, until the mixture is ready to be placed into the beautifully geometric comb. Then she and her 50,000 or so hive mates will hover and buzz in the dark all night, every night, flapping their wings to create the hot, breezy conditions needed to dehydrate the watery mixture. Several sunrises later, they will seal me off in a golden cell of beeswax. My slow-flowing, viscous, 18% water solution now irrevocably complete. In her lifetime, our bee may visit 4,000 flowers, and yet all her gathered nectar will produce only 1/12 of a teaspoon of me. Given the daunting math, the hive has to muster all its forces to produce enough of me to feed itself. To wit, in the year 2010, Brooklyn beekeepers opened their hives to find a garish, bright red honey that tasted like too sweet cough syrup. The mystery persisted for months until it came to light that the bees had been flying past the flowers and straight to a local maraschino cherry factory as a shortcut to their sweet fix. The process that produces me may have helped form you, too. Scientists believe that wild hives full of honey produced the calories that early humans, such as Homo erectus, walking in Africa, needed to develop their brains into those of modern humans. That puts me in a class with fire, tool use, and hunting as a key ingredient in human evolution. The other sweeteners humans avail themselves of, made of sap, agave nectar, and sugarcane juice, all require boiling a sweet liquid down into a syrup or a granulated sugar, a process that was developed much later. With time, those evolved brains learned to domesticate bees to produce me in a farmed setting. Today's beekeepers support large-scale industrial farms, which would be unable to grow their crops without hiring traveling groups of bees to come pollinate their vast, single-species fields. The bees will endlessly fill the towers of combs stacked onto their hives by their beekeeper, who then collects the extra honey for your consumption while still leaving the bees all they need to eat. Today, the average American consumes nearly a pound and a half of me every year, in tea, on toast, and beyond. If I do say so myself, I am a timeless treasure. Literally, I never go bad. Samples nearly 3,000 years old found in the Egyptian pyramids are as edible as the day they were entombed. Through some combination of low water content, high pH, and the natural presence of hydrogen peroxide within me, I am highly antimicrobial and therefore impervious to spoiling. My antimicrobial nature also makes me an excellent salve for chronic wounds, keeping infection out while holding in the moisture that skin needs to heal. Alas, my good health is not guaranteed. U.S. beekeepers lose about 40% of their hives annually to colony collapse disorder. The problem lies in the growth of industrial agriculture and pesticide use, as well as urban sprawl and changes in weather patterns, all of which reduce the number of flowers bees have to visit. If bees continue to die apace, almonds, apples, and peaches, along with any crop that relies on their pollination, will become scarcer and pricier. As will I. Given that trend, it's not surprising that I am also perhaps your supermarket's most frequently adulterated food, laced with cheap sugar syrup or corn syrup to stretch the supply. In the year 2010, the largest food fraud in American history was busted when authorities discovered $80 million in smuggled, tainted Chinese honey. That is among the reasons I hope you buy domestic honey, especially from local beekeepers. I'd also appreciate your letting your own garden grow just a little wild and holding off from frequent mowing and herbicide spray. My future depends on all of us fostering spring and summer's wild blossoms, thus keeping the bees, who give so much, to you, to me, without ever asking for anything in return. I am the food you eat, honey. This sidebar, it's about homemade honey butter as a spread, as a sauce, and flavors to add. First, as a spread, using an electric mixer or a rubber spatula, thoroughly combine 8 tablespoons softened unsalted butter with 4 tablespoons of honey. Season with salt and refrigerate. Return to room temperature and spread on muffins, toast, pancakes. You name it. Now as a sauce, in a large skillet with sloped sides, melt 6 tablespoons of unsalted butter with 4 tablespoons of honey over medium heat, stirring to combine. Season with salt and drizzle over popcorn, potato chips, toast, waffles, fried chicken, and so on and so on. And flavors to add to either cinnamon, nutmeg, or ginger, woodsy herbs such as minced rosemary and thyme, citrus zests, rose water or orange flower water, or extracts such as vanilla and almond. And finally in Reader's Digest, here's Everyday Miracles, A Flag's Long Journey Home by Juliana LaBianca of Reader's Digest. One early morning last winter, someone broke into Sean Marceau's truck. That wasn't particularly unusual. Thieves had already hit him 3 times in recent months, even as the truck was parked outside his home in White Swan, Washington. This time, they made off with a laptop, some rifle scopes, and, unbeknownst to Marceau at the time, an American flag. But this just wasn't any flag. It had belonged to his son, 22-year-old Marine Lance Corporal Joe Jackson. The flag had been signed by each member of Jackson's platoon at the beginning of their deployment and had hung over his bed for his entire tour of duty in Afghanistan. Jackson was on foot patrol in Helmand Province in 2011 when he stepped on an improvised bomb and was killed. His father frequently took the flag to memorials and veterans' events to share his son's story. It wasn't until several weeks after the break-in, when he was getting organized for an annual memorial rifle shoot honoring Jackson, that Marceau realized the neatly folded flag was gone. "I was very upset, in a rage," he told Fox and Friends, "because I lost it." Marceau reached out to friends and family, asking them to search for the flag wherever they could, at pawn shops, secondhand stores, even the local Goodwill. Nothing. He went to the rifle memorial on April 21st without the flag. In a last-ditch effort, the heartbroken father took to Facebook. "Would appreciate it if all my friends could share this note. This American flag was stolen out of my truck," he wrote, including a photo of the flag. "Any information would be great. No questions asked." By the next morning, on May 5th, his post had been shared around 2,000 times. By May 7th, there were around 40,000 reposts. "I couldn't believe it," says Marceau. "There were so many comments I couldn't keep up." Unfortunately, the flag was still nowhere to be found. Soon enough, there were other flags. A 9/11 firefighter sent one to Marceau, signed by dozens of his colleagues, many of whom had responded at the World Trade Center. A Special Forces Sergeant Major sent a flag he'd taken with him on missions around the world from Iwo Jima to Afghanistan. Marceau, a retired Marine himself and the son and grandson of veterans, cherished these gifts while continuing to pray for the return of Jackson's flag. Still waiting for those prayers to be answered, Marceau went about his routine as normal. On Tuesday, July 3rd, he visited his son's grave, just as he has every Tuesday since Jackson was buried. "It's religion," he says. "It's my time to meditate and pray and get ready for the week." When he got to Jackson's grave that morning, there was something there. A flag. Marceau didn't let himself get too excited. People had gifted him so many flags in the weeks prior that he figured this was just another keepsake that had belonged to someone else. But when he got closer, he noticed the signatures. Black ink on each of the white stripes. This was his son's flag. "It was pretty amazing," he says. There was also some mystery. Whoever had returned the flag left no note, and as of yet, no one has stepped forward to say he or she returned it. Did the thief bring it back? Did a Good Samaritan find it in a thrift shop? Marceau has decided not to speculate. "For me, it's just a miracle," he says. "It's God. That's who put it there." Thank you for listening to today's Reader's Digest. If you have questions or comments about the program, please call us at 210-829-4223. This program is replayed after 9 o'clock in the evening. This is John Fisher saying goodbye from Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio.